Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Red Sox On Deck Prospect Podcast. I'm your host, Bob Osgood, and joining me, as she does every week, is Shelley Verstraete. Shelley, what do you think? When's the next time the Red Sox are going to lose a game?
Never, apparently.
159-3.
I totally
heard here first.
Yeah, just to give like the listeners kind of like a we're talking in like the second game of the doubleheader.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just won that game with that amazing catch. It was such a good game to watch.
Yep, they're definitely going to lose the second game, and this will be have no context whatsoever tomorrow when it's in everyone's feed. But, yep, we saw an incredible catch by Alex Verdugo in game one. I think everybody immediately thought back to Benintendi's catch in the playoffs a couple of years back. Just full speed, toughest ball as an outfielder running in like that, you know, not going left or right, you know, just deciding whether to lay out or not, because if it gets past you, it's three, maybe four bases. So what a play. They are 8-3 and not what we saw coming around the first time that we were recording these during the regular season. So a lot better vibes around here. We've got the long weekend coming up with Patriots Day up in Boston. Aren't going to have a marathon again this year, but they do have the 11:05 start on Monday. So big homestand coming up, and definitely a lot of exciting things happening with the Red Sox right now. Today, we are going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to talk about some news and notes to start, and then we're going to talk about the early July MLB draft. We'll talk about the Red Sox having the fourth pick. It's been, you know, a few years since they've had a pick that early. We'll talk about some possible players, get you familiar kind of with the format of the draft, some of the players up top, and a couple of outside-the-box prospects to think about that. If, you know, there's about four players for them around with them having the fourth pick, there'll be a couple others that we'll talk about as well. But we're going to start out with some news and notes. Brian Mata. We opened last week with Brian Mata. We talked about him, I think, the week before, and turns out he's going to have Tommy John surgery. He'll miss all of the season. He will miss a good amount of next season. Shelley, not a huge surprise. I think we said they might be delaying the inevitable and just wanted to be 100% sure a week ago. Looks like that's the case. What do you think about Brian Mata?
Yeah, when I saw this, this news kind of come out today, like it was just like a gut punch because, I mean, we kind of knew that this was already coming, but it always hurts whenever you do see a pitcher, especially like Mata, who is like one of our like best pitching prospects, just go down and, you know, we're not going to see him for a year and a half, like 2 years, something like that. It just really, really stinks because he was so close to contributing to the team and all that. And it's just a big setback and just a big, step on your toe kind of feeling, you know, just, yeah. Just so awful.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked last week about when in the season you have Tommy John surgery and how many years you might potentially be out. You have it in April and you might miss two seasons. 12 to 18 month recovery. Everybody's different. Everybody has, a different reaction to that. And when they start throwing again, how long their rehab is, it varies. So ideally we see Mata next year at some point. If he can get back on the mound in July or August and throw innings in a minor league game next year, that would be a success to just get back into competition. And, you know, by the time that 2023 rolls around, which would hypothetically be the next time there's a full season, he'd be 23 years old, and, a lot will have changed. So, yep, it's unfortunate, but certainly not surprising with Brian Mata. Second news item, the Worcester Red Sox have started playing simulated games, and they are airing on Twitter, so how about that, Shelley? I know you stumbled across that over the last day or so. Did you catch any of the first day or two of action out there?
Unfortunately, I haven't really been able to. But when I saw this like come through like my Twitter feed, I'm like, oh, they're doing this again, because they were like one of the only teams, you know, last year at the, you know, at the alt site that was actually airing some of these games. So we actually got to see, you know, Tristan Casas and all these other prospects last year that we'd never really thought that they were going to. They're doing it again just made me smile. I will be tuning in when I'm at work. I'll put my iPad up, you know, to the side of my desk and just kind of like watch it, you know, yeah, when I'm supposedly working. but yeah, it was just so great to see. And yeah, it was, we got a, you know, a look at the new park at Worcester. It was really, really awesome.
Yeah, and only the diehard of diehards would be watching that, especially with the Red Sox playing at that time. They've had 2 o'clock games all week. They play at 1 o'clock tomorrow. So, but it would be good to have in the background, depending on who's pitching, who's playing. And in the first day of alternate site workouts, Connor Siebold was pitching. And according to an Ian Kundle tweet, Siebold faced 21 hitters over 5 innings at Worcester, allowed 4 hits, struck out 7 in those 5 innings, and walked 2. Was throwing hard, missing bats with his fastball, and he said that he seemed to be working on his breaking ball given on how often he was throwing that curveball. So, a good sign. We've talked about it before. There are options when injuries occur or if any of their starters are ineffective. Put Siebold on that list. Tanner Houck, who we've talked plenty about. Garrett Whitlock, who we profiled last week. That's about 8 deep that you know, you could be comfortable with. Obviously, you don't know how any of these pitchers would work out in the rotation, as we haven't seen most of them so far. But it's good to have another name that they seem to be comfortable with when the inevitable injuries happen to the rotation throughout the season. So, you know, good to hear that. And it's good that you can tune in if you're bored on a weekday afternoon.
And yeah, totally agree.
Yep. And then the last item we had was the Atlantic League, which is an independent partner with the independent league that partners with Major League Baseball. Had a couple of rule changes, and we've talked a lot about minor league rule changes. I figured it was worth bringing up one more time, because the first kind of most notable item was moving the mound back 1 foot. They're going to try that. And we talked about exactly that 2 weeks ago during that the article and podcast that Theo Epstein was on with The Athletic. You know, possible changes. We referenced, you know, in the 60s when they moved the mound down after such dominant pitching and strikeout heavy league, which is what the league is turning into. And you could tell that Theo Epstein talked a lot about balls in play and trying to get as much away from the 3-outcome game that we're seeing now. You know, we'll see if they move it back 1 foot and that's too drastic. Maybe it's a half a foot, but it'll be interesting to see what the results are with that. That was the first item. And then the second is that the designated hitter is only going to be in effect until the starting pitcher leaves the game. To me, that seems like incentive, obviously, to leave your starting pitcher in the game. Maybe they don't think that the best product is having your starter pulled in the second or third inning of a playoff game, when so many eyes are on those playoff games, when you have more fans and these pitchers are being pulled so early in the game. Incentive to leave them in longer and have your star pitchers, you know, Blake Snell, for example, pitch another turn through or a couple more innings, would be to have that DH, because otherwise, once the pitcher is pulled, you'll have to have the pitcher hit or pinch hit for them for the duration of the game. So, but the moving the mound back and the DH only, any thoughts on either of these and how they might affect the Atlantic League and if they might be in consideration down the line?
With the moving the mound back, I'm kind of fine with them just seeing how it goes. I saw some things on Twitter today that they did some studies to see if, you know, if there's any like mechanical changes for a starter, you know, moving different feet or inches or whatever back from where it usually is, and they in their study they didn't see any mechanical differences, and they kind of like say, okay, so maybe there won't be like any new injuries. I'm fine with them like testing this out, especially at the, you know, the Atlantic League, where baseball can still like try to figure out how to quote unquote make the game better. And then when you know, they can just go into a lower level or whatever. And it doesn't really change things too much. The DH one is really interesting. I didn't really expect to see something like that, but I agree with you. It's really going to affect how teams decide how they want to keep their starters, because honestly, if they do that, then they really can't have openers anymore. Because I mean, you know, I have the Twins game up as I'm podcasting, right?
Yeah.
And you know, one of the greatest DHs currently is Nelson Cruz. So the Twins really have to keep their starter out there as much as you can, because you don't want to take Nelson Cruz out of the lineup. So
that one,
I'm really interested to see what happens, because that can really change things.
That's a great point. I haven't talked to anyone that says they love the opener. That's you know, one of the great things to happen in the last decade in baseball is the opener. You know, I think the only pitcher that you could use as a follower would be Shohei Ohtani in that case, with the way that he's hitting on both sides. So you're right. I think that would potentially or likely remove that aspect as well. Okay, we're going to move on to our MLB draft preview. We'll probably over the next 3 months touch on this a good amount as news comes in. We'll have the College Baseball World Series that will be interesting as you go from May into June. There will be a month or so after the college season, and then it'll ramp up to the early July draft, which is a little later. It had been in June previously, and it's going to be in July this year. The Red Sox have the fourth pick. So they have the fourth pick in the first round, they have the 40th pick in the second round, and they have the 75th pick in the third round. That doesn't just add up 32 picks in between, because there are different type of compensation picks. There's competitive balance picks. And, of course, the Astros are losing two picks for another year based on some scandalous activity in the past. So, 40 and 75, but we'll focus today on the fourth pick. Going into prior to the college season, you looked at mock drafts, you looked at lists, and it seemed to me that four names stood out. Those names are Jack Leiter, right-handed pitcher from Vanderbilt, Kamar Rocker, also right-handed pitcher from Vanderbilt, Jordan Lawler, shortstop, a high school shortstop from Dallas Jesuit High School, and Marcelo Mayer, a high school shortstop from East Lake High School in California. We figured we would start with the two pitchers. Shelley, take your pick. Do you want to start with Jack Leiter or Kamar Rocker?
I'm going to go with like my favorite of the two. My favorite of the two is Leiter.
All right, go nuts.
I really do like this dude. Like, he is a bit on the smaller side. I think that he's about like 6 foot. But everything that I've seen from him, this year, like through Twitter and a few, you know, YouTube, video, scouting things that I have seen, I just really like this dude. Like, he strikes out just everybody. He has the command and everything that you want from a pitcher, he has, and he's just looked absolutely dominant. For Vandy this year. And I just remember like in the preseason where they had Leiter like falling to like 5 or 6. I'm like, there is no way that he's falling past 4, because I would just, you know, totally rip the Red Sox a new one if they let Leiter fall that far. And then It's not happening anymore. There goes that. I will crumple up that piece of paper and throw it in the trash. That's not happening. But yeah, Leiter, I think that he's going to be, I don't know, maybe quote unquote like the safer pitcher, which saying safe and pitcher in the same sentence is seems wrong to say. But I think that he's like the more just the more safe guy. Like, Rocker definitely could be, like, a guy who could just, you know, be an absolute ace. But Leiter, I just think that he is just, he is it for me. Yeah.
Absolutely. He has made 8 appearances so far this year. He's 7-0. He has a 0.55 ERA. And in 49 innings, he's struck out 84 batters. This is in the SEC. and opponents are hitting 082. So those are video game numbers. He has a no-hitter. He followed up his no-hitter with 7 more no-hit innings. I don't know the exact number. I think it was 19 or 20 over 3 appearances when all was said and done without allowing a hit. You know, if the name Leiter rings a bell, his father was a pitcher, Al Leiter, who you still see on MLB Network a good amount. But I agree with you. He throws really hard, mid-90s. He can touch in the upper 90s. Looping curveball that has reportedly a high spin rate. He has a slider and a changeup. He's absolutely dominant. He is flat-out unhittable. And along with Rocker, who I'm going to talk about next, they will be quite a tandem, and I'm sure every one of their games, whether it's in the regionals or hopefully if they make it to the World Series, that all of those games are televised and we get to see every pitch that these two prospects throw during the College World Series. So the other one is Kumar Rocker. He is a lot bigger than Leiter. He's not 6 feet. He is 6'4", 6'5", on some sites, 255 pounds, just an imposing force on the mound. He took over the tournament 2 years ago, the last time that they had a tournament. High strikeouts, electric fastball, regularly in the mid-90s during that tournament and since. He had thrown 114 innings all as a starter in college entering this season. This year he's had 8 appearances as well, 7-1, 48 innings, 12 runs, 10 earned. So 1.88 ERA. 73 strikeouts in those 48 innings and an opponent average of 161. So both great pitchers, and really were going 1-2 in a lot of mock drafts that you saw early on. The interesting thing with Rocker is that his fastball has kind of dropped off a little bit in his past 3 starts, reportedly down to about 91 on the fastball, which is interesting in a lot of respects. You know, you hope that there isn't an injury there. He did throw a lot of pitches on a start 4 starts ago prior to these last 3 starts where he was throwing closer to the lower 90s. So hopefully he's healthy. Hopefully this is just kind of a phase that he's going through during the season and can get that arm strength built back up prior to the tournament, because his command is great. But they, you know, as games go on, he's lost some of his fastball command. I did watch one of his early starts where he was just impossible to hit the first 3 or 4 innings, and then as he got to the 5th, you could see that he was missing up in the zone. He started to walk people. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see that, and whether that will cause him to drop in the draft. I've heard some folks who have him closer to 4 or 5 or even lower in the draft coming up, you know, if it was right now. So much can change between now and 3 months from now. So it's just something to keep an eye on. This is the player that I would love to have fall. That ship has sailed with Leiter. I'm pretty sure he's going to go 1. But I'm hoping that Rocker falls to 4 to the Red Sox. That would be kind of my dream scenario. Anything to add on Rocker, Shelley?
No. I would love for him to fall to 4. Yeah, but we were talking, you know, prior to us recording, you kind of, you know, told me about, you know, Rocker's kind of like diminished velocity, and that totally shocked me. So after we get off this pod, I will be doing some more research on that. So
yeah, and I think it's probably important to note who's picking ahead of the Red Sox. The Pirates have the first pick, Rangers have the second, and the Tigers have the third. I don't think that any of those teams are going to be drafting based on need. We all need plenty of talent. Doesn't matter what position it's at, whether it's a shortstop or a pitcher. So it'll be interesting to see where those two land, and if they land in the three picks prior to the Red Sox.
Yep.
All right, same question. There's two shortstops that I mentioned, Jordan Lawler and Marcelo Mayer. Do you want to take either of those, Shelley, and start it off?
I guess I'll go with Mayer. I'll give you the easy one with Lawler.
Oh, thank you.
Exactly. I took the easier pitcher. I'll give you the easier shortstop. Perfect. So Mayer, yeah, he's a 6'3" prep guy out of California. He is, you know, he's a really, really interesting guy. He is definitely a better defensive guy than hitter. He is the best defensive shortstop in the class. And I mean, this, if you look like Baseball America or Prospects Live or MLB Pipeline, there are a lot of really, really interesting prep shortstops in this class. And just knowing that Mayer is the top defensive guy, that's like really good. He has really, really good actions in the field. He can go both sides, easy peasy. The biggest downside with him is honestly like the power. It's very fringy right now. I'm not sure if it would ever really get to average or whatever, but I mean, if you got a guy who can just be an absolute amazing glove in the field and with a good, bat to ball skills, and maybe he'll get to above average power, that's really good. And, and for real baseball, I mean, you need a good defensive shortstop. So, if the Red Sox end up, drafting Mayer and he signs, it's still a really, really good prospect.
Yeah, definitely. And looking at, watched a little bit of film on Mayer, and left-handed hitter, he has such an easy swing. He barely steps, is a quick bat. Just that. Some of the best, most memorable swings that you think of often come from left-handed hitters, and you think of Rutschman. Adley Rutschman is a recent draft pick from the left side. Mayer just has that easy, smooth swing, and the ball just explodes off of his bat. So I agree with that. That would certainly be another one. I think either of these shortstops, either of these pitchers, picking in the top four, it's a good spot to be. It might be the top tier, and so much can change between now and then. We have a couple other players we'll talk about after this. But it's a good spot to be where they are. I think that there's a supposedly a drop-off at four. So we'll see. With Jordan Lawler, he had bit more of a leg lift when I was watching some tape on him. Bit of a stride. He's committed to Vanderbilt. Better hitter of the two, like Shelley mentioned. Faster. He has, above average future power. Has what you could consider 70 grade speed. Great 60-yard dash time. Near the top of anybody in the class. He'll be 19 at the age of the draft. As Mayer will be 18 still, but a little bit lower on the defensive scale, has a chance to stick at shortstop, but at the next level will need to make some progress. His arm isn't super strong, kind of 55 grade arm that Baseball America put on him. We'll need to make improvements to definitively stay at shortstop, but he has a bat that without question can play up somewhere in the infield. It's just a question of whether he can stick it short. But hit tool, power, and run, all of those are going to be excellent grades that you see leading up to the draft. There's a ton to like about him. He's 6'2", 185 pounds. He's committed to Vanderbilt, just like the other two pitchers. But I have a feeling, unless something strange happens between now and the draft, that we'll see him most likely get drafted and not end up going to Vanderbilt after this summer. So let's kind of take a pause there. Those are the top four that were in the early season mocks. There are a couple other players that we're going to hit on a little bit. I did want to mention Jaden Hill. He was a pitcher from LSU who was kind of in this mix, in this top five, top 10. mix up until a couple of weeks ago when we found out that he was going to have Tommy John surgery, likely to drop out of the first round. Who really knows? A player that will be probably out through 2022, just like we were talking about with Tommy John. But he had high 90s fastball with movement and a slider and a changeup that was really kind of high ceiling but low floor pitcher, because he was injured 2 years ago and then everybody missed most of last season, and then now he has an arm injury. So sky's the limit with Jaden Hill from LSU. It's unfortunate that he had the injury. Shelley, any thoughts on Hill, or kind of where a team that you think could potentially benefit from Hill, or whether he might be a later pick that the Sox could be interested in?
I mean, I really do hope that he lasts to the second round, and we can you know take a gamble on Hill here. But it's like I just get like this feeling that one of like, I don't know, like the Dodgers or the Rays, like if they have like a very, very late pick in that first round, someone's just going to snag him, right? Just pick him and just be like, yeah, let's kind of see how this goes. Because he is a really, really good talent. But like, also, like you said, like we haven't really seen him, you know, go a full distance really. So he's a very intriguing arm, and he's definitely going to be a name that I'm just going to watch just to see where he goes, just see which team, you know, takes a chance on, you know, this, you know, on this talent.
Yep. Yep. Agree with that. There are some interesting catchers in the draft. Henry Davis from Louisville. Shelley, do you want to talk a little bit about Davis?
Yeah. I've really... when I was prepping for this episode and just kind of like reading, you know, some scouting reports and stuff like that, and just seeing kind of like performance as well during this college season, Henry Davis, I really, really, really do like. He is definitely a hitter. Like currently he's hitting above 300. He's at 300, 381, 463. He has an absolute cannon behind the plate, and he really is a good defensive catcher plus offensive catcher. He kind of like brings both. I mean, like you said, there are a couple other catchers that are maybe a little bit more offensive minded, but Henry Davis just brings it all. And I really like this guy. I mean, I don't know, I think it'd be a little bit aggressive to take him number four, so I don't think that the Red Sox are really going to draft him. But, man, I think Henry Davis is really going to be fun.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he's a college catcher, so he's not that far out from, you know, college bats. They move. Sometimes they're up within 2 years. And Christian Vasquez, his contract is up in 2 years. So it's possible if they love him. He's a right-handed hitter who would play up pretty well at Fenway. He's got an incredible arm. He's a physical catcher, you know, spends all day in the gym, it appears. So if that's the direction that they go, it could be somebody, you know, Vasquez is gone in 2 years, or you bring him back for another year, or have kind of a bridge catcher to a player like that. It would be interesting if they went with a college catcher there.
Yeah, and I mean, like, and catcher is, like, really, really shallow in the system. I mean, what, Connor Wong?
Yeah.
That's really about it. So, yeah, it would be really awesome if they just, you know, went with this guy.
8 homers, 9 steals in 30 games so far this year for Davis. So that's a name I've got an eye on. Potentially, you know, just outside the top four, or if anything happened to one of those top four players, I think he's kind of a sleeper pick that could be in the top 10 and maybe even the top 5.
Yep.
Another name that I want to bring up, I think interesting for anybody in the Boston area, Sal Frelick is a Boston College outfielder. He's only 5'9", 175, but has really taken, his stock has gone up in the past year into the top 10 on most lists. He was a Lexington High School standout, played baseball, football, and hockey there. And has really improved over the last year or so. His stock has gone way up. You know, high energy plus athlete type of player, both sides of the ball. Early in this season, you know, he was looking like a top 15 I see a lot of lists that have him closer to the top 10, but just athleticism, speed, versatility, both sides of the ball. Outfielder currently, but I read in some scouting reports that he could be moved to second base if that's a better fit for him. So I thought he was an interesting player to talk about. And then Brady House, did you want to finish up with that, Shelley? Brady House, third baseman, high school bat.
Yeah, I really like him too. He's a really, really interesting bat. He's, you know, he'd be about just a little bit over 18 years old, 6'3", 215. He's a prep guy out of Georgia. So just based on that, you know, the Atlanta will probably draft him. They really like to get those Georgia guys. But I mean, he has the ability, you know, to be a plus hitter. He has above average power. He'll probably be able to stick it, you know, short or maybe move over to third, because I mean, he has just an amazing, amazing arm. So he's like a really, really interesting guy. And he might fall a little bit because he's a prep guy and is like really, really toolsy. He might fall just based on like signability concerns and stuff like that. But whoever signs Brady House is just going to be in for just an immense talent. This dude is awesome.
Great. Yep. And the last one I was going to mention was Connor Hoagland, who is a pitcher at Mississippi. One of the better strike throwers, kind of more of a command pitcher. Early this year, he's 3-1, 2.57 ERA, 49 innings, 78 strikeouts, 33 hits, 16 walks. So that's the line on Hoagland. He doesn't throw as hard. He kind of sits in the low 90s. I know that his velocity's been good this year, been up closer to the mid-90s at times, and has a good slider, very good slider that has been considered above average. So, you know, those strike throwers, command guys, I've been more and more interested in as time has passed. I think if there are any concerns with Rocker and a team around, you know, picks 3 through 6 really are looking for an arm there, that Hoagland is a sleeper pitcher that you could see in the mix. I think kind of my last question for you is, in terms of needs, is that something that you ever think about in the draft, or do you think that's something that the Red Sox should think about? Does it matter? We talked about a catcher, we talked about a couple shortstops, third base, and a few right-handed pitchers. Does need matter? Is that something that you think about, or is it just kind of go get the best player and figure it out later?
For me, if I'm, you know, picking at 4, like the Red Sox, I'm just going to pick whoever I think is going to be the best player. But if I was picking like later, maybe I would think a little bit more about need. But honestly, you just go for the best player and figure it all out, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
right. You have to. You move somebody if you need to.
Exactly. Bryce Harper was drafted as a catcher and he barely played catcher. Like, he went straight to the outfield. So just get the best player.
Yeah, and if you think about how this lines up with the prep bats versus the college player, you know, you don't think about with pitcher, you don't worry about position there, but I mentioned the Vasquez situation, and the best catchers are college bats, and or at least this draft, I should say. Mm-hmm. And then at shortstop, you've got two prep bats that are 18, 19 years old. You know, Bogaerts will be closer to his mid-30s, say 5 years from now, when a shortstop works his way through. And once a shortstop is 22 or 23 after being a high school draftee, you never know. So much can change between now and then that I agree, especially in their current situation. I would love to see them develop a pitcher. I can't think of who the last one would be. You can argue Clay Buchholz. I don't know if that counts. You could go all the way back to John Lester 15, 16 years ago. You know, they've developed some pitchers to varying degrees, but a front line one or two pitcher, it's been a really long time. So that's what I'm hoping for, and we'll see what happens. So any other thoughts? Anyone that we missed or Anything else you want to talk about in the draft preview?
No, but it's really excited. Like when you brought this up to me, I'm like, oh, I haven't really done research. And then I just start doing research. I'm like, oh, wow, look at all these awesome guys. So I'm really, I'm going to dig in, and I'm just so excited to get more players.
It reminded me to watch more college baseball, which yes. I was doing in February, because I would watch any game at that point. I've fallen off a little bit the last month, but definitely going to get back into that. So, all right, we're going to wrap things up. We have our other podcasts on the Over the Monster Podcast Network. We have Matt and Brian on the OTM pod. We have the Red Seat podcast with Jake and Keaton. And we have the Precap with Shelley and Keaton. So, great episode. Thanks for joining me, Shelley, and we'll talk to you next week.